Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and it's great to have everybody here with us again today. We've got a great episode coming up for you here, and we'll talk a little bit more about the topic we're going to be covering. It's a little bit controversial and a little bit just a cutting edge, really, in some things that are changing in our technological world, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But, of course, we have to talk as well about who our esteemed co-host is, and you all know who that is. It's Sam Bradley. Hey, Sam.
Well, it's me. Oh, yeah. Well, we're cold out here in Northern California, Jamie. We've been getting rain off and on and so forth, and I hear it's pretty wet down there in the south, huh, Joe?
Yeah, with two days of rain nonstop.
Sounds like a lot of rain. Dr. Joe Holly, when we last talked, he had just moved into his new house and had already lost a tree from the weather. So he's now patching the roof and having fun in his new home.
Exactly. Exactly.
Jamie, sounds like you're getting all that rain back there now, huh?
Yeah, as things go in the States here, you know. Things track from west to east. So Memphis got the rain. Now it's moving across onto the East Coast. And I've had rain here for about the last oh, goodness, it's probably been a day and a half or so. Probably got another day or so of rain coming before it clears up. So, you know, it's nice. It's nothing too bad. I mean, it's not like it's a storm or anything as far as winds and things like that. It's just a nice steady rain that we get this time of year usually. So it's pretty standard.
Well, you're not going to believe this, but the day before yesterday, we went down to 25 degrees at night. I'm sure that was even colder than Baltimore. And that's pretty rare.
Yeah, it's been down in the upper 30s lately, off and on, you know, at night anyway. It's strange weather. It's just this time of year where it's 60 degrees one day and 40 degrees the next. And so it's kind of just what we get used to this time of year.
Yep. Can't decide if it's fall or winter. So what else is in the news, Jamie?
Well, the time we're recording this, it's a few days, three or four days after the Colorado Springs Planned Parenthood shooting incident that occurred. And, you know, details still aren't all in as far as motive or anything like that. But it's a little bit of a twist on the active shooter drill. And I wanted to kind of see what Joe's thoughts were about this. The police tried to get into this building and were repulsed by the gunman and held off for a period of time. You know, they did try to, you know, gain access and were held off for a period of time until the gunman finally surrendered. Three people died, and one of them a police officer, 9 people were injured. And it just, you know, it seems like a regular theme we talk about here on the podcast. And it ties right in with the specialized training. I know, Joe, that you and Jim and the rest of the gang at Paragon do to prepare agencies and organizations for what to do when this type of thing strikes their community. And unfortunately, it seems like it's more and more prevalent every time we talk.
Boy, you're certainly right about that, Jamie. Every day in the news is another one of these things. So it's sad, but true, unfortunately.
Well, I'm sorry, Sam, but we talk about the nature of these incidents being, we used to talk about them being once in a lifetime incidents. And now I wonder if that's even true in the case of these types of active shooter incidents. You know, maybe an earthquake, a major earthquake or major airplane crash or flood disaster might be a once in a career incident for a responder, but it makes me wonder if these shooter incidents are going to be more and more prevalent, and you could be a responder who has to do this several times in your career.
Oh, I think that's a great point, Jamie. You're right. These things are becoming so common. You know, that's the second one of these things in the Colorado Springs area in the last year. So it's, you know, those folks have had floods and everything else out there this year. They've had a pretty bad year all the way around. But to your point, you're right. These things are becoming such a commonplace happening that they're no longer, in many cases, a once in a career kind of response.
And not only that, but if you think about it, Littleton was where this really started with Columbine, and that's about an hour and a half away. So yes. Is there something about this very suburban, otherwise quiet part of Colorado that seems to be just ripe for this kind of thing? And I don't know what it is. But on your point also, Jamie, you know, as much as, you know, you hear about, I remember in Southern California, you hear about the gang stuff so often, and you kind of come, you know, you're numb to it. And I hope we don't get to a point on this kind of thing where people are going, oh, yeah, another school shooting, you know. And just thank God people like Jim and Joe are out there preparing first responders for this. And for those of you out there that haven't, you better think about it, because I think Jamie's got a really good point. This is not going away anytime soon. This is, you know, your chance of responding to something like this as a provider is going to be getting higher and higher, it seems.
Which kind of swings us into, I think we can kind of segue from that into our topic for tonight, because it's interesting when we think about, you know, responders in various forms as parts of organizations where they are employees and in many cases organized in by unions so that there's rules and processes to manage employees. And we found an interesting article from somebody we'd had on the show in the past. And Sam, why don't you introduce our guest and talk a little bit about how we kind of segued into this topic of sort of almost a freelance responder.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I met Drew years ago when he was just a fledgling EMT. In fact, we had to throw him out once because he wasn't old enough. But he came back and was an EMT for a while, became a firefighter, worked for a couple departments, unfortunately had a career-ending injury, which is part of another project we're working on, but became pretty passionate about finding resources for people in those situations that, you know, may have started like him when they were very young, and that's all they've never ever known, and aren't taking, you know, don't feel the need for higher level education. So that's a project for another time. We talked a little bit about it, yay, those many months ago. But what he did a very interesting, deeply researched article about Uber. As many people know, that is the pseudo taxi service that is run by private people who use their own vehicle. And I've used them. I think they're awesome. I'd rather have a nice, clean black car with somebody that isn't going to turn corners on two wheels. And it isn't that much, in terms of expense, isn't that much more expensive than a taxi. Well, now it seems like they're moving into a whole new arena. And some of the things that Drew was digging into are kind of scary. How deep are they going to go? And is this going to affect EMS as we know it now? And is this going to affect potentially what we do in disasters? So, Drew, I'm going to throw it to you. Tell us anything else you'd like us to know about you, and then we'll talk about this.
Hey, Sam, thank you. And guys, appreciate being back on the show. So since my injury in the fire service, I've reinvented now as a business executive strategy consultant, MBA, and have gone on to sit on the Healthcare and Workforce Development Committee for Bay Area Council, which is a lead policy group in the Bay Area. If you're in the Bay Area, you know that there is no shortage of innovation, technology, mergers, acquisitions, and that we work in one of the most advanced healthcare areas of the world at this point, with UCSF being, you know, the top healthcare institution in the nation. So I started looking at things from my knowledge and really from a strategic point, and I said, really, what is the future of EMS? You know, we have community paramedic programs that are being run by fire departments. Labor is continuously being challenged, and we have a new generation that doesn't understand the fight that we did years ago to have good wages, benefits and working conditions that our labor unions really protect. And with Uber coming into the healthcare arena by driving around and giving flu shots and having a subscription model, I really became concerned and see the big picture of this as, one, what will happen hypothetically if we have Uber EMS? Two, we go from an employee model to an independent contractor model and devalue an already devalued workforce. And three, what is the service level and the impact to existing contracts out there for lower level, lower tiered emergency response services that, you know, hypothetically in theory, could be serviced by Uber. And the question is that good, for our local communities?
What do you think, Joe?
Well, it's absolutely fascinating. You know, we're already seeing Uber offering to bring a nurse or someone, I don't know the details, to your house to give you a flu shot for $25 or something. So, they've already made a bit of a foray into the healthcare world. I can only imagine what would happen if they were an alternative to ambulance services, although I think to some extent it would have to be a really interesting approach. If they're actually going to try to do medical care of some sort, they're going to have to be licensed as an ambulance service, and they're going to have to meet all the requirements of licensure for ambulances, which will be quite a challenge for them. But I could see them, attempting to take care of a lot of the lower acuity kind of stuff for folks that don't feel like they need an ambulance, and they call Uber instead to give them a ride to the hospital.
Well, I this is the challenge, and I know that Drew, you're this is a little bit of a speculation on your part, and you're looking at the models. I mean, I've been reporting on house call services that provide services either via mobile app, telemedicine app, or even in some cases home visits by a physician or a nurse practitioner, and these are all app driven services, which I see as a return to times past when the house call was a common form of healthcare provision. But do you really think that there can be a method for having a licensed EMS provider who operates as an independent contractor?
I do. Take case in point, my injury when I was injured as a firefighter paramedic. At that point, I have a vehicle. Had I wanted to, and I was an Uber driver, I could be driving around, and I could have a paramedic license. And then from there, Uber can, they already work with all the local municipalities throughout the United States and sign contracts for service agreements, business licenses, and whatnot. So what would prevent them from going in and signing a agreement or going through a RFP process on lower-level care? We all know that ambulance rates, the cost is just so high. Our emergency rooms are saturated. So if there were protocols in place for a company like Uber to come in and assess somebody, and if they, vital signs are stable within normal limits, what would prevent them from transporting that person to a clinic and having more of a progressive EMS, care model for lower level calls? We're not talking the high level cardiac arrest, things like that, but priority dispatching nowadays is fairly solid and can really screen out the serious injuries from those that are a cut finger that is bringing on a $750,000 piece of fire equipment, a big ambulance, and whatnot. Do we need that apparatus there for a cut finger? And I think that long term, the positions between labor and management will be challenged by the consumer, i.e. the public and the taxpayer.
Well, I have two questions. One is, they would have to be sanctioned by the state as an ALS provider in order to go out and provide any level of ALS care. And I'm not sure how they're, there's two kind of things here. There is regular everyday EMS where they're out there doing this on a regular basis. And then there's the ancillary to disaster type of ALS where you have MRCs and you have, other groups of people that come out when they need, they need to surge the medical capacity. So I'm not sure where the states sit in terms of this. And also, this sounds like it's integrating more in the area of community paramedicine at the moment than it is our everyday EMS. We know that there's a lot of community paramedicine programs that are just getting started. California's involved in a three-year pilot. It's going to be a while before that sees air. So it sounds a lot more like they're moving into that direction. What do you think, Drew? Am I right?
Yeah, I think that's the starting ground right there, Sam. I think you hit it right on the head. And then the big question is, we all know when we've been on the table. I've been lucky enough, I guess, to say to be on the table on the employee side and then the employer side. And the contract negotiations can range from a few months to years on end, between labor and management. Well, a company like Uber, the speed to market is one of their strong points, and innovation and collaboration, letting down barriers, collaborating with the competition, understanding what the market environments look like. So, it's taken us forever to get to the point where we have community paramedics, which are very important for our communities on multiple levels, including cost savings. But from there, now comes in Uber. Who has the market long term? I think those are the questions that, every labor management team out there needs to wake up, and they need to realize that, their positions in negotiations may be challenged by the interests of the taxpayer, the consumers who can't see an alternative via Uber Health.
So I'm wondering now with, we know that sometimes there is a disparity between public and private in both having to work in the same arena. I wonder if now that's going to push them into more of a partnership now that they may consider this a common enemy, or I don't know, maybe that they whether they will or not, but it's a very different thing that's now encroaching in their space. So I wonder how that is going to affect the public-private relationships.
Yeah, and we can use, one example. If you've been to San Francisco on game day by AT&T Park, now Mission Bay, where the Warriors intend to put the new stadium out there, UCSF is out there. So when you get out there on game day, traffic is gridlocked. So how do you move a large apparatus through that traffic when now Uber dominates the roads in San Francisco? So you have multiple people, theoretically, in vehicles, and maybe they're EMT, maybe they're paramedic, and they can be on scene first to provide some sort of care. Is that a good thing for our communities? When we talk about service, so I really view the service position not a great position by labor and management. The fact is people need medical care, and they need it immediately. So if they can be served by somebody right then and there via app-based technology in a gridlock condition like that, well, that might be a good thing. And then back to your point on public-private partnerships, the cities, having spent some time in the construction industry in an executive role, the cities really don't pay a lot of attention to proper infrastructure planning. So long-term, what does the public-private partnership look like within healthcare? I think both sides really need to start coming together to address these issues.
Well, like we discussed the other day, and I mentioned it to Jamie and Joe, that in the county in which you worked and I still reside, as of January 1st, there is a very new type of public-private partnership going in. They're calling it the Alliance, and I won't get into a lot of detail on it, but maybe this is the direction that fire and private EMS need to get into. So they're both kind of protected. So I would say in this county, Uber wouldn't have as much of a chance because there is a stronger alliance between public and private. But, in talking about your traffic impacted situation with lots of people, their vehicles still have to be able to get in and out of there, just like a fire vehicle or an ambulance would have to get in and out of there. So as far as getting people to the hospital, I don't see where – I think your point is there's more of them. So they might be a little closer when a call comes in because there's X number of Uber drivers out on the road rather than the people that's sitting at the firehouse. But I would also assume that there are people within that venue that are staged to take care of those incidents, at least get in there and get some care rendered, and then figure out how to, you know, get them to the hospital. So everything you're bringing up is a good question. You're showing some interesting balance in the pros and cons. I don't know, Joe, what would you think if you called 911 and a black car pulled up and Mr. Driver in between airport runs comes to take care of you?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really fascinating, conundrum almost. I don't know what the public's perception of that would be. Some of that is expectation that a big boxy truck's going to pull up and two guys are going to jump out in uniform and have all their stuff, as opposed to a guy in a car who's got his pack in the, in the trunk and gets out and can deliver some sort of care to you. And, how do you know that guy's credentials, and how comfortable are you with what he's going to do and what's going to be the transportation possibility? Is he going to end up having to call an ambulance to transport you or take him yourself? Or, I think there's an awful lot of different issues in there that would have to be worked through to see if the public would be willing to accept something like that. And I think to some extent, Uber's got a toe in the water. They're trying the flu shot thing, and they'll send out somebody who's qualified to deliver vaccinations. I don't know who that is, and I'm sure it varies from state to state, but somebody's going to come out and allegedly give you a flu shot, and how comfortable is the public going to be with that? I don't know. That's a relatively innocuous thing to do, and it'll be very interesting to see how well that's received by the public, and I'm sure to Uber is going to be a key to them having a sense of what direction they need to go in with this.
Well, Joe, it's this isn't a new thing as far as public health in recent years finding novel ways to encourage people to get their flu shots. And they are already, this isn't the only business public health partnership that occurs. There are flu shot clinics at major corporations all the time during flu season, where the local health department partners with a corporation, or the local hospitals partner with a corporation in order to get employees vaccinated, because it makes sense from a productivity standpoint to do that. I think that there's a possibility for services to be provided, but the question I'd have, EMS and healthcare in general is such a highly regulated industry. And not only is the industry regulated, but the people who provide care in that industry are highly regulated. How would you feel, Joe, as a medical director? Put your other hat on as a medical director. How do you manage being the medical director for a freelance core of EMS providers?
Well, I think you've touched on exactly the point. I think it's very different if it's presented as a well-respected, known healthcare entity is partnering with Uber to provide transportation, for the person to come out and give you the vaccination, versus Uber is the provider. And these folks are freelancing as Uber drivers, and are also freelancing with their paramedic license, nursing license, whatever the case may be, to do whatever, in the meantime. So I think how it's structured is going to be very important in the perception of the public, and sort of how much trust do they have in the entity that is supplying whatever services medically that they're going to supply.
Yeah, I'd be cool with anybody giving me a flu shot that doesn't cost me a lot of money and I don't have to go out and get it. But when I'm really sick, I don't know that I want to see a taxi driver with a jump kit walking in there by himself. I think, you know, that's a whole different situation. And I can see where there's going to be a mixed bag of reactions from the public. You've got some of them that are going to say, hey, if this is costing me less money, because they're the first ones to jump up and down when they look at the ambulance bill, that's going to be one side of it. But the other side of it is they want to see the traditional care that they're used to getting and they're comfortable with. And they're probably, you know, maybe your older population isn't going to be as comfortable with something this radically different. Would you agree, Drew?
Yeah, I think we're at a pivotal point in American history and society where, you know, we have the baby boomers and the next gen millennials, and really a difference in value systems. And that's where I think the shift can come into play. When we look at things from an economic standpoint, Uber has been extremely successful at devaluing the workforce. Sure, you know, our president claims we have the lowest unemployment in the history, but we also know in economic theory that there should be a certain amount of unemployment, which is roughly around 6%. Well, in the Bay Area, we have unemployment of 3.1%. Now, are those Uber drivers taken into account in that employment model? Well, I'm not quite sure on that. I'm not an economist. But if you look at the amount of people who are now working as 1099 independent contractors, so the value system, capitalists say, well, lower prices, more consumption. My question is, what happens when we want the lowest price, including giving up labor, you know, a solid labor force, a unionized labor force that provides good middle-class careers, that provides retirement, to shifting now to, let's say, an Uber EMS model of 1099 independent contractors who don't receive Social Security, they receive no health benefits. What is the long-term economic impact to our nation when we go to an employment model of independent contractors and, you know, let's say hypothetically 75% of Americans are no longer employees and they're independent contractors based on the speed and the money behind big business and companies like Uber that lobby and put pressure on the courts to delay their decisions of enforcing the employer status and classification, which these people really are. They are employees of Uber, and that's being challenged in the courts right now.
Well, maybe the answer is that somewhere it needs to be somewhere down the middle, where maybe Uber in and of themselves can't just become an ALS provider, but they could be a resource for our current ALS providers in terms of, well, maybe we could use them as a resource for doing immunizations or doing low-level care or doing going out to people maybe through a community paramedicine model where we know these people generally don't need an ambulance, but they may need transportation. It's another transportation option. I mean, there's all kinds of things that maybe if they were to work together rather than one versus the other, I don't know. I'm just thinking. There's just right now it's a wide open concept. But
well, if you look at the UK model, where you typically, unless it's prioritized as a high acuity case that requires an ambulance or like is highly likely to require an ambulance, paramedics drive up in a sedan and provide care. A single paramedic drives up in a sedan, assesses the situation, and then steers that individual to an appropriate resource for care. And it may be setting up a doctor's appointment for them. It may be plugging them in with a home visit from a healthcare nurse. It may be calling an ambulance because they need transport. It may be putting them in the car with them and driving them to the hospital because they don't need an ambulance, a full ALS setup to drive them to the hospital for what's going to end up being stitches. You know, these are all things that happen in other places of the world, and they look at what we do, where we send an engine company and an ambulance with two people on it to every single 911 call, which is a huge waste of resources.
And well, you made a great point. You know, when I studied for my MBA and I lived in India for a bit, and I asked, I said, what do you do to get to the hospital? I said, well, you go to the local clinic down the street, and there's a golden hour, and hopefully they can transport you to the hospital, but there is no paramedic in that ambulance. And when you look at things culturally, in our culture, we put a high premium for life in our society. And I think that's exactly what you're talking about. Is what is that premium, and what is the cost that we're willing to pay for that level of response?
Wow. Too many questions, not enough answers. This will be really interesting to watch.
And, you know, the questions can keep coming, because this is an interesting topic. And I think this is a topic that's ripe for us to get some comments on the website over at disasterpodcast.com for this episode. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you've been burning for us to ask another question, maybe we can have Drew back on and have a follow up to this, or at the very least, we can get an answer. We can all leave an answer for you of our opinions over on the comments area on this episode. So head over to disasterpodcast.com and ask that question, make that comment, lend us your thoughts about, is Uber EMS even a viable option? Is it something that's going to happen, or is it something that'll never happen or never see the light of day? I think in some places it might happen, in other places the states will shut it down very quickly, but we'll see. So leave your comments and let us know. But I know one thing, Joe, I mean, no matter what happens, these people are going to need training. Whether they're coming in as Uber paramedics, you know, what happens when that disaster incident happens, or that major casualty incident happens, and we get these people responding, there's still going to be a need for high quality, pointed and focused education, and that's what Paragon Medical Education Group does. And I hope that you guys can adapt. I know you're very adaptable. You seem to come up with new situations and new scenarios all the time to adapt to things that are happening weeks before.
Well, clearly we're going to have to start incorporating the use of Uber into mass casualty and disaster evacuation scenarios as another transportation option. So we got
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, really,
not a bad idea.
But you know, there are things you guys do, and we appreciate the support. Everybody knows at this point that Paragon is our partner in getting this podcast out to you, and you guys provide high quality educational resources to prepare people for major incidents like the active shooter incidents we've talked about, like major disasters in your communities, like train or plane incidents, crashes where you have hundreds of casualties, perhaps something like what happened in Paris a few weeks back. These are all things that lend themselves to having a need for really highly integrated training between services and in a community. And that's what you guys excel at. So if somebody wants to find out where they can get information about how to bring Paragon into their region or their district and get fire, EMS, police, hospital, all training together to prepare for that one big incident that could be just around the corner, where can they get a hold of you guys?
Well, you're exactly right, Jamie. It is all about integration of all those different services. And again, it sounds like we're going to have to look at whether Uber needs to be integrated into that as well. But you can find Paragon on the web at paragonmedicalgroup.com and be looking for our new website, which we hope to have up and running before EMS Today in February. You can also find us on Facebook under Paragon Medical Group, and our Twitter feed is ParagonMedEDU. And obviously, you can reach us also through the Disaster Podcast.
Yeah, and Joe, you know, you guys are going to be doing some pretty exciting things at EMS Today. So I urge people, if you are going to that conference or thinking about going to that conference, you really want to sign up for some of the things you guys are going to be doing training-wise with the conference. You want to? Can you sneak a little information to us about that?
Sure. We're going to be doing an active shooter pre-conference there that is going to kind of go above and beyond, I think, what a lot of active shooter components have been before. We're certainly firm believers in cadaveric incorporation in our training, and we hope to be able to do that in an active shooter scenario as well. For what it's worth, I got an email actually just earlier today from EMS Today that shows that pre-conference is currently has the highest number of registrants of all the activities at EMS Today so far. So it's moving fairly quickly, and I would certainly encourage folks to not wait to the last minute on that.
Sign up before it fills up.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll look forward to seeing you there. And, of course, we're going to have some things there going on with the podcast. We've got a little bit different setup for the podcast studio, but we're going to be there in some way, shape, or form, and we're definitely going to find a way to get some interviews done with Joe and Jim and find out exactly what's going on and how the pre-conference training went, and get a little after action report. So we'll definitely get that squared away. Drew, where can folks find you? I know that you've probably raised a lot of questions in people's minds, and maybe they want to reach out to you and bring you in. I know you provide a lot of resources for organizations and communities out there that are looking to find out how they can better connect, engage, and transform their organizations to better serve their communities.
Sure, absolutely. Anybody can reach out to me via online, on LinkedIn. On LinkedIn, connect with me there. You can read the full article, as well as my website, which has a contact and email. And my website is Drew, D-R-E-W, A, V as in Victor, E-R-S-A, Drew Aversa.
Excellent, Drew. And we'll make sure we have links to that in the show notes as well, so that people can go over to disasterpodcast.com and find a link to you as on the site there. So we want to thank you for coming on the show. It's great to have you.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys very much.
Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, right now, under a blanket, but that's another topic. But on social media, you can find me under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, and certainly on the disasterpodcast.com website. And yes, CMS Today is going to be really interesting. So I can't wait to see what Jim and Joe are going to do there and what we're going to do there.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. Still getting some of the details ironed out as to how we're going to be doing our podcast setup. We're not going to have our own booth. I think we're going to be working with one of our sponsor partners have a presence in their booth, and that's kind of where things stand right now. I'll have more details hopefully in a future upcoming episode, and as soon as I know, you guys will know, so we'll make sure you're filled in. But you want to get to EMS Today, and you can find out more about that at emstoday.com. Sign up for the pre-conference workshop that the Paragon's doing. Let's fill that thing up. Let's get that thing pre-conference filled up completely early, so that EMS Today knows that this kind of information and training is valued by the community. I think it's going to be something that people are not going to forget. As far as me, you can find me under the handle PodMedic and just about everywhere. And you can also reach me as well over at disasterpodcast.com. You know, Sam, we've talked a lot about a lot of things. Even with Uber medical care, it's a little different than what we're used to.
Well, and we haven't even talked about, the disaster implications that disaster federal teams like Jim and or Joe and myself are on. Are we going to be out there interacting locally with Uber? So you never know. It'll be interesting to see. We'll have to keep in touch with Drew and see how this goes, because I'm sure he's keeping an eye on it. But as in every other case we've talked about, disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.